government declares a state of emergency because of the electricity and coal disputes.
Sexual equality.
Equal pay with men? Well, that's just preposterous.
And rock stars.
We are part of the change. Guys now can wear makeup. They can shout and scream.
Come back with us to the 70s, this Monday night at 9 on BBC Two.
This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. Just gone 1 o'clock, time for the news read by John Shea.
The government has defended pressing ahead with contingency plans for a strike by fuel tanker drivers, despite the union agreeing to consider a settlement deal. The Unite Union accused ministers of being unhelpful. Next week, 60 of its officials will discuss a proposal drawn up during talks hosted by ACAS. Delegates from 6 world powers are holding talks with Iranian officials in Istanbul to discuss Tehran's nuclear programme. President Obama called the meeting a last chance for diplomacy. A spokesman for the EU's foreign policy chief, Catherine Ashton, said they were hoping to achieve a substantial outcome. The United Nations Security Council will vote later on allowing international observers into Syria to monitor the fragile ceasefire. There are claims of breaches on both sides. Armed rebels are accused of killing security officials, while government forces are said to have shelled the city of Homs. South Korea has stepped up its search for debris from North Korea's failed rocket launch yesterday. In North Korea, tens of thousands of people filled a stadium in Pyongyang for a mass rally to show support for their new leader, Kim Jong-un. Bookmakers have rejected suggestions by council officers that clusters of betting shops, takeaways or strip clubs in one street can damage the local economy. The local government association is calling for new powers to avoid these groupings, which it says put off shoppers. The Association of British Bookmakers argued their businesses attracted people into an area. The oil company Total says significant progress is being made on plans to stop a gas leak on one of its offshore platforms. More than 200 staff had to be evacuated from the Elgin platform off Aberdeen last month. Experts are making preparations to drill a relief well. 40 runners and riders will set off in just over 3 hours in the 165th Grand National. There's a real possibility that a female jockey could win the race for the first time. And the weather. Wintry showers in northern Scotland will slowly spread south. Southwest England and South Wales will be cloudy with heavy showers. Elsewhere it will be mainly fine and dry. The news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at almost 3 minutes past one.
And it was read by John Shea. Well, it's time now on Radio 3 for today's early music show with Catherine Bott.
Last night, London saw one of the key events in this year's early music calendar, as the London Handel Festival presented La Nuova Musica's revival of the original version of Handel's Il Pastor Fido, written exactly 300 years ago. Handel's opera may have been the first full setting of the text of Il Pastor Fido, but by the time he wrote it in 1712, he was following in the musical footsteps of more than 100 composers who'd already been drawn to this story of a faithful shepherd over more than a century. These days, though, it's slipped back into relative obscurity. So in today's early music show, I'm going to be taking a look at the original play to see just what it was that so captured the early 17th century imagination, along with some of the music it spawned. But let's start with something from that Handel opera, from Il Nuova Musica's CD of the 1712 version of Il Pastor Fido, released this year.
Thank you.
Music from the overture to Handel's Il Pastor Fido, La Nuova Musica, directed by David Bates. The play Il Pastor Fido was first published way back in 1589, almost 100 years before Handel was even born. Its author, Giovanni Battista Guarini, was a diplomat, courtier, and sometime professor of rhetoric and poetry at the University of Ferrara, whose life was outwardly one of fame and riches, but when looked at closely, a rather small-minded existence. His whole career was dotted with fallings out and lawsuits. That's not to say he wasn't a genuinely creative talent, though. With Il Pastor Fido, he was hoping to establish a new kind of drama based on sound classical principles and rooted in the pastoral school of literature, but full of emotional contrasts, the tragicomedy. And he worked on his new play for almost a decade before publishing it. By the time the complete work was in the public domain, it had already gathered a large following and attracted some fierce criticism for its immorality, all grist to Guarini's disputatious mill. Here's the story of the play in a nutshell. A rather large nutshell, though, so hold on tight, I'm going to whiz through it. Part one first, and then some music. Here goes. The play is set in a pastoral land cursed by the gods, who have never forgiven the infidelity of a fickle shepherdess in years gone by. The gods can only be appeased by two things: the marriage of two people of divine lineage, and a demonstration of fidelity from a shepherd, which will finally wipe out the burden of guilt laid on the country by that errant shepherdess. All eyes light on Silvio, a young hunter, and a descendant of Achilles, who by the sound of him has commitment issues, and the lovely Amaryllis, a descendant of Pan. But Silvio just wants to spend his life hunting, for game, not girls, and Amaryllis loves another, a shepherd called Mirtillo, who loves her right back. This is unfortunately the love that dare not speak its name because of the dread curse of the gods, so poor Amaryllis has to be seen to spurn Mirtillo's affections and settle for Silvio, thus saving a whole imaginary Arcadian nation from a fate worse than death. You'll have spotted that Mirtillo is indeed the Pastor Fido, the faithful shepherd of the title. Cue music. We'll hear Mirtillo in the depths of amatory despair, and before him, Silvio's servant, trying in vain to persuade him to devote more of his heart to love. An ensemble setting by Schütz of words by Guarini from his play Il Pastor Fido, faithful shepherd Mirtillo's lament, Oh, the bitter sweetness of love, sung by Cantus Köhn, directed by Konrad Junghanel. And before it, they sang Marenzio's setting of the servant's encouragement to Silvio. The little bird sings of love, listen to him. Now, the plot, part two. Appropriately for this pioneering tragicomedy, Il Pastor Fido has pantomime villains, first among whom is Corisca, the kind of girl who gives shepherdesses a bad name. She's in love with Mirtillo as well, so she has a bash at discrediting her rival Amaryllis, and it goes a bit wrong. Amaryllis has behaved entirely honourably, renouncing the love of her life to save her country. But when she's found in a compromising position with him in a grotto, where else, she's deemed to be just like all the rest and condemned to death. Naturally, Mirtillo offers himself in her place, but as the priest Montano prepares to strike the fatal blow, Mirtillo's foster father arrives with the amazing revelation that Mirtillo is actually Montano's son, and that makes him Silvio's brother, believed drowned in a flood. So the curse can be lifted through the marriage of Amaryllis to Mirtillo, who, as well as turning out to tick the godly descent box, has also displayed the required fidelity. Guarini was aiming to be controversial with this play, but he also made sure to obey all the rules of classical drama, with not one but two pairs of lovers, one noble, the other less so. And that idea is found everywhere. Shakespeare's As You Like It ends with four weddings covering the entire Arcadian social scale. Mozart's Magic Flute contrasts Tamino and Pamina with Papageno and Papagena. So it turns out that the laddish Silvio has a faithful admirer in the attractive shape of Dorinda, who, in order to get his attention, unwisely disguises said shape in a wolf costume. You remember how much he likes hunting? So he shoots her, fortunately with an arrow rather than a blunderbuss, and not fatally. "But you're beautiful," he cries, and love's magic heals her wounds. Double wedding, Arcadia rejoices, the end. The Consort of Music, directed by Anthony Rulli, with Schütz's Selve Beate. Blessed woods, you joined in our lamenting, now share in our rejoicing. From that brief plot summary, you'll have gathered that Il Pastor Fido can be seen as the prototype for the pastoral tragicomedy. Lyrical monologues for lovelorn shepherds and shepherdesses, alternating with scenes of broad comedy. Guarini, as I've said, put a great deal of work into it. And despite being called a monstrous and disproportionate composition by Padua University's Professor of Moral Philosophy, the play, with its pre-publication groundswell of admiration and attention, swept Europe. Not so much in staged productions, there were comparatively few of those, but as an exciting read. By 1602, there were 20 different editions in Italy alone. And the affetti, the high-flown emotions expressed in the text, inspired composers everywhere. We've heard music by Schütz and Marenzio already. Philippe de Monte named a whole volume of madrigals after the play, and by the time it was 10 years old, more than 100 composers had made music from its words, including Claudio Monteverdi. Guarini died in 1612, by which time Il Pastor Fido was becoming one of the most widely read pieces of secular literature of its day. But its very human story brought criticism from churchmen. In 1605, Cardinal Roberto Bellarmine wrote that the play was more harmful to Catholic morals than the Protestant Reformation itself, And even Monteverdi's musical setting didn't go unscathed, one Giovanni Maria Artusi damning his Pastor Fido madrigals for their perceived crudities and license.
E pur verde tu spirito.
La Veneziana, singing two of Monteverdi's settings of words from Il Pastor Fido, demonstrating that the course of true love never did run smooth. Here we have Cruel Amaryllis, whose very name teaches love's bitterness, and Silvio, baring his breast for Amaryllis to strike, which she refuses to do. Unrequited love has always been a terrific theme for songwriters, so the appeal of madrigals like that is obvious today. But in Guarini's time, his play's popularity had a lot to do with the concept of Arcadia. Arcadia today is a province in Greece, but it's also a poetic symbol of unspoiled wilderness, where every prospect pleases and not even man is vile. It's a land of lost content, whose inhabitants lived naturally, uncorrupted by worldly vices. That past tense is important. In Renaissance literature, Arcadia is a sort of classical pantheistic Garden of Eden, to which mankind can never return. As the English poet Sir Philip Sidney wrote in the 1590s, "Do you not see how everything conspires together to make this place a heavenly dwelling?" Cantus Köln, directed by Konrad Junghannel, in de Wert's madrigal praising spring, youth of the year, mother of flowers. It seems always to be spring in Arcadia, a land of the gods whose idealised topography is so conducive to mortal love. Renaissance paintings of this paradise show us undulating meadows with noble mountains in the background and the softest of grass dotted with flowers for faithful shepherds to languish on, and trees permanently in leaf for baser rustics to romp around. A land of the gods, yes, but the presiding deity is naughty old Pan. What was he doing, the great god Pan, down in the reeds by the river? Well, Elizabeth Barrett Browning goes on to tell us at some length what he was up to, but one feels that the average faithful shepherd didn't really want to know. Arcadia, symbol of an imaginary golden age, lends itself to literature, painting and, of course, music. Returning to the specifics of Il Pastor Fido, that music wasn't necessarily confined to vocal settings of the text. In 1737, Nicolas Chédeville used the play as inspiration for a set of sonatas, wrongly attributed to Vivaldi for many years.
Thank you.
flautist Irena Grafenauer and harpsichordist Brigitte Engelhardt, with Philharmonisches Duo Berlin playing the sixth sonata in Chédeville's set entitled Il Pastor Fido. By the time those sonatas were written, Guarini's original play had been superseded by many more. The late Renaissance into the Baroque was a pretty good time for European theatre. I'll just drop the names of Shakespeare and Molière in for now. You can probably supply a few of your own. Arcadia had been a useful distancing device to enable painters to offer up tasteful nudes, writers and composers to present stories whose passions could safely be ascribed to quasi-mythological figures. But as the 17th century went on, plays and paintings about real contemporary mortals became quite acceptable. Finely wrought, loftily word madrigals gave way to impassioned solo songs and arias about human frailty, and Arcadia lost much of its allusive power. By the time Handel wrote his setting of Il Pastor Fido in 1712, albeit with a canny eye to the pastoral romantic taste of his English public, the Golden Age was a bit of a busted flush. The opera only managed 7 performances, and one London wit wrote in his diary that the scene represented only the country of Arcadia. The habits were old, the opera short. Big yawn, obviously. Sadly, there was no such thing as early music in Handel's day. Surely that bored London wit would have liked these Arcadian delights if they had been available for him to hear.
Thank you.
17th century Italian settings of words from Il Pastor Fido by Marco da Galliano and Ruggero Giovanelli, sung by Cantus Köln, and before that, Il Complesso Barocco, directed by Alan Curtis, in a plea from poor wounded Dorinda in her wolf outfit, by Sigismondo d'India. To end our look at Il Pastor Fido, let's return to La Nuova Musica's revival of Handel's opera. Listening to his music, as A.A. Milne almost wrote, we will know for as long as we care to remember that somewhere in Arcadia, that enchanted place, a faithful shepherd and his shepherdess will always be playing.
Final chorus of Handel's Il Pastor Fido from La Nuova Musica and David Bates' new recording of the 1712 version of the work. And it ends today's Early Music Show. It was presented by Catherine Bott and produced by Sam Phillips. Catherine will be back with tomorrow's Early Music Show at the same time, and she explores music by Martin Pearson and John Milton, father of the poet. That's at the same time tomorrow afternoon, just after the 1 o'clock news. And speaking of Milton, at 10 o'clock this evening in our contemporary music programme Here and Now, Tom Service introduces a performance of Luke Bedford's first opera, Seven Angels, the opera inspired by Milton's Paradise Lost. That's Here and Now, here on BBC Radio 3, tonight at 10 o'clock. Meanwhile, in an hour's time from now this afternoon, there's this.
In Saturday Classics over the next two weekends, violinist Daniel Hope chooses recordings that reflect his life in music.
Some of the people and pieces that have crossed my path on my own musical journey so far.
And the history of his priceless violin.
The fiddle has passed through the hands of several generations of inspirational musicians.
There's music from his violin heroes, Yehudi Menuhin, David Oistrakh and Pinchas Zuckerman, and from the original lineup of the celebrated Beaux-Arts Trio.
I must admit, when I was invited to join the group, it was like entering something of a dream world.
Saturday Classics with Daniel Hope. This afternoon at 3 on BBC Radio 3.
It's a minute or so past 2 now, and a second chance to hear last Monday's lunchtime concert from Wigmore Hall in London. It's introduced by Sean Rafferty.
Welcome to Wigmore Hall for this recital by one of the world's most outstanding quartets. In over 40 years, they've given us 40-odd major additions to the recorded repertoire and performed to dedicated audiences right across the globe. The Tokyo Quartet are quartet in residence at Yale School of Music. They spend their summers teaching and performing at the renowned Norfolk Chamber Music Festival in America, and they give masterclasses during the year throughout the world. Their appearance today there was tinged with sadness for their loyal and very critical fans. The two remaining Japanese members, Kazuhide Isumura, a founding member 42 years ago, and Kikuyo Ikeda, who joined soon after, are to leave at the end of the year. They've been playing on a very valuable collection, the so-called Paganini Quartet, 4 Stradivarius instruments owned and played by the legendary virtuoso, which have been on loan from the Nippon Music Foundation since 1995. And I think those instruments go back to the foundation at the end of next year. The music today, Beethoven and Schubert, the man whose spirit we've so recently been celebrating here on Radio 3. Always a joy to return to one of the most human and life-enhancing of composers. It's a short work we begin with, a milestone in itself, a herald of the 4 masterly quartets to come, and a far cry from his earlier essays. The quartet sets, really an abandoned first movement, was the first in the genre for 4 years. Magnificent in itself, so why not finish it? Well, maybe his fertile mind was already savouring another idea, but we are very grateful for what we have. As one critic put it, it has the lyrical radiance of the Trout Quintet with the dramatic intensity of the finest songs. To perform the quartet sets in C minor, boat 703, live here at Wigmore Hall, the Tokyo Quartet.
Thank you. Thank you.